go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Oh, I sense a rather interesting program tonight. It's Thursday. It's not Wednesday. It's not prayer meeting. But still, the Spirit is upon me. Hallelujah! For a variety of reasons. We have lunacy. We have meanness. We have madness. And we have love. Yes, we got love. And we're going to hit it all. We are going to hit every last bit of it. That I promise you. And I was asked last night, specifically to avoid the primaries like the plague, and I think it's damn good advice these days. Like Barack Obama, I am inclined to ignore Hillary Clinton now, because she can't be the nominee. It's over. Everybody knows it's over, but Hillary Clinton. It's really kind of sad when you realize it. Pathetic, pitiful. It reminds me of a Jimmy Buffett song. Of course, then again, let's be fair. Everything reminds me of a Jimmy Buffett song. But you know that. But I won't even tell you which one it is. Because we're going to get this out of the way. We're going to have done with it. I'm going to try not to have a hissy, okay? That's my promise, although this stuff just sort of makes my skin crawl. This is from a news story today from USA Today, from an interview that she gave. And I don't give a damn about the primaries anymore. As Mark Levine said, West Virginia no longer matters. And, hey, look, we're West Virginia, we're used to it. If we mattered, the rest of America wouldn't sit idly by content while West Virginia families, West Virginia homes, and West Virginia communities are destroyed so that they can walk, so that the rest of America can walk out of the room and leave the damn lights on. While our mountains blow up, our streams are filled, and our valleys covered up with rock and what is called overburden. So we don't matter. And in large part, the primary doesn't matter much to me. I got some work to do. There are a couple of Democrats running against Jay Rockefeller for the Democratic nomination. They have somewhat slightly less of a chance than a snowball on the hottest day in hell, but I'm going to go vote for him. There are real freaks running for the Fayette County Commission. I got to go vote against them. There's a couple of real goobers running for county magistrate. Got to deal with them, too. But I'm so done. I'm moving on. Well, I moved on a long time ago now, didn't I? Because I start. How many different nights did I say, McCain is the problem, McCain is the problem, McCain is the problem? I've got further proof this evening that McCain is the problem. And it falls, it very clearly falls to Barack Obama to deal with McCain, who is in fact the problem. But A long time ago, what seems a long time ago, I learned that there are things that you don't just let go by. That there are things that, even when they are said in jest, are so noxious that you have to make some sort of a comment, whether it's in private conversation or in public or behind a microphone. And Hillary did one of those in this interview with USA Today. This is the quote. It's a newspaper, so I don't have audio, but this is the quote. "I have a much broader base to build a winning coalition on," she told USA Today. And she cited an Associated Press article, quote, "that found how Senator Obama's support among working, hard-working Americans, white Americans, is weakening again." This is the quote. "That found how Senator Obama's support among working, hard-working Americans, white Americans, is weakening again, and how whites in both states who had not completed college were supporting me." It's not the Associated Press's words. Those are Hillary Clinton's words. Let's look at them again. "Senator Obama's support among working, hard-working Americans, white Americans." That's not a comma-connected list. That is not a list that is three separate subsets. Working people, hard-working Americans, white Americans. No, that is a building list. That is a rising crescendo, if you will, to strike a musical note. In other words, working, hard-working Americans means white Americans to Hillary Clinton. "Whites in both states who had not completed college were supporting me." I am sick of this garbage. I am sick to the point of literal physical nausea over it. I'm disgusted with it. As a native born and bred Southerner who to this day lives south of the Mason-Dixie line, I'm sensitive to this stuff because I grew up around it and I know the code. And the code is real. And I know what people mean when they use the code. Working people, working, hard-working Americans, white Americans. Why didn't she just say that the shiftless are supporting Barack Obama? I'm pissed. I'm truly pissed because you know what? In the name of liberal and progressive policies and conversation and discussion and dialogue, I'm behind this board. I don't have another job. Because if I had another job, and I could, I'm certainly capable of going out and finding something else, but it would end the horn. It would end it, okay? It would be over if I went out and found some eight-hour-a-day job working for some corporate paymaster. So I deem that what I do here behind this board to be, while it is a labor of love, it is certainly no less a labor for being loved. And it is taxing, and it is tiring. This is not where we cue up Bob Seger singing "Turn the Page." about how, you know, trying it is to be a rock star going from town to town. No. It's just the reality of what things are. I was in here working on stuff. Things, you know, technical things. Things related to the programs. Things related to public relations. At about 7:45 this morning, I have scarcely left the studio because there are things that have to be done. But apparently, according to Hillary Clinton, I'm not hardworking because I'm not supporting her. Because she has defined her supporters as working, hardworking Americans, white Americans. And whites in both states, talking about Indiana and North Carolina, who had not completed college, were supporting me. Okay, I'm not in Indiana or North Carolina, but I still don't think that lets me out of the equation. I'm going to try to let this go. I'm going to except to broadly and boldly condemn Hillary Clinton for using this divisive racial politics. And it is, okay? It is. And all along, I have been equal. I have been, in fact, balanced in condemning each candidate when they screwed up. And you know what? They have both screwed up in abundance. In their vitriolic distaste for one another. But somehow it seems like Senator Clinton, in her desperation, is simply driving herself into the swamp. That she has gone to a cesspool place that Lester Maddox would be more likely to be found in. This is George Wallace politics. This is schoolhouse door politics. Don't tell me about their great former history in regard to race. I don't debate that. They did, the Clintons did, have a very good record in regard to trying to heal wounds across the racial divide that torments and persists in this nation. And it would seem that Senator Clinton has taken every last bit of it and flushed it down the toilet now with comments like this. Working, hardworking Americans, white Americans. She made that reference in an interview with the USA Today, citing an Associated Press article. That just makes me gag. Truly it does. So I'm done. Before you switch away and say, oh no, he's going to go down the primary garden path tonight. No. I'm done. Well, mostly done. I hope. Trying to see if I can pull up the audio of this. Nah, it keeps disappearing on me. Never mind, I've got computer problems of some sort again. So, I don't know, maybe I'll get it back at some point later in the program, but I'm done. I am done with Hillary Clinton. I am done with her bigotry. I am done with her racism. And, well, so's the rest of the country, too, for the most part, because she can't get well. She's mathematically eliminated and seems to be the only person left in America who doesn't know it. So, just for you, Hillary, a little song dedication.
sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas with every Christmas card I write. May your days be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be white. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas with every Christmas card I write. May your days be merry and bright.
Little Johnny Mathis. Because, you know, frankly, she's got about as much chance of a white Christmas in May as she does of having the nomination. And I feel a little better for it. You know, I there was a time when I was conflicted. I didn't know who I was going to vote for. I've gone back and forth and back and forth between the rifle ad and, you know, this latest I represent white people comment. Let's go to the phones. Our good buddy Ed is back with us. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you, Bob. I figured I'd see you over at the high school. Clinton was over there. Bill Clinton was.
I gave some thought to going, but there was no way I could get out of here, and at $3.75 gasoline, it just wasn't in the cards.
Man, if you'd have called me, I'd have come and got you.
Yeah, but I can't leave this board, Ed. I mean, that's the thing. I'm here, you know, I'm behind it 18 hours a day. So, you know, it's virtually impossible to get away.
Okay, well,
you know, ever since Agnes went to, you know, be a full-time grandma and mother, there's not a lot of replacement help.
That takes your crutches, don't it?
kicks them right out from under you.
But
I do get a bowl of soup or something out of it every now and then, and she tries to make sure that I don't
that
just wither
ain't
away.
Sick, you're doing good. I do that myself. But, I got to shake hands with him, and I told him, be careful not let Shirley Love get his hand in his pocket like he did John Kerry and Edwards over, remember when he got on the airplane with them over?
Oh, golly, yeah.
Well, I just warned him about that, and he said, who? And when I said his name, he got right funny looking. And I'll lay you odds, I saw Shirley Love there. I'll lay you odds if he done got with him. If he didn't, he got the warning. But I did a big spiel on him, and Dave Perry and a couple of them, I think it was Monday on Steve's program, but I wanted to tell the people, if I haven't already on your program, the guy named Love runs Ain't Shirley Love. And see, it don't give a first name on these signs. His name is Benjamin Ben.
Yeah, Ben Love, running for magistrate. I mentioned at the top of the program, if it wasn't for needing to go and vote against people like him, I'd just stay home primary.
Yeah, well,
because it's all you, because all the presidential stuff is over now. It's yeah. Licked. It's done.
Let me tell you how he got the name Work. I mean, Love. Do you know how?
Yeah, that was through that. We talked about it. Night before last, where they changed his name from his biological father's name to Shirley Love's name so that he could have name recognition here in this county.
Yeah, and make a political career. And you know, I'm telling you, I know the Loves. And they ain't very many of them know the speed limit, let alone anything about the law. it's disgusting. And I went out there and had a daggone sticker of Dave Perry and Shirley and Love, pardon me, on my car. If I'd have known which one it was, I would have opened the door and put them things in their car, ringing wet.
I understand.
I didn't know which one.
They stickered your car while you were there?
Yeah.
See, I don't care what political party you are. That's sleazy.
That is not.
Give them away. Problem. Offer them to people. Let people have them. But if you go out, you know, if you go out and put something on my car that I don't, that I haven't approved of or I haven't consented to, I consider that an act of vandalism, Ed.
Yeah, and not. You know what? The churches do that.
Oh, they're the worst.
I came out from church one Sunday, and here was one of the idiots in there that night when we went out there. They had some politician on behind the windshield wipers while we was in church. They done it, and that night that I've been praying for the Lord to guide me which way to vote. You know, she didn't have enough sense to make up her mind and do the research herself. She had to have something put behind her windshield wiper to be directed.
Well, it was, yeah, that's a miracle.
Oh, you ain't kidding. That's a miracle from one of the politicians that they got away with it, because if I'd have caught them, of course, I was a little better.
But that's why those types of people are so easy to lead, Ed. That's why you can get them behind all these wedge issues, God, guns, gays, whatever. They're sheep. They are what the Bible calls them, sheep.
Yeah. Well, there was some Republican in the audience over there, and she said, "Well, why haven't you and Hillary done something on a national health bill or a health bill?" And boy, you talking about getting none? Damn, I wouldn't want to.
I bet Bill got all kinds of hot.
Yeah, I'm telling you, he unloaded on her that a boxcar wouldn't hold, and the crowd went more wild over what he told her than when he did when he got on stage. And I said, "Why don't you escort the Republican out?" And you know, it was pretty quiet. I shouldn't have said nothing.
Nah, that's all right. That's
he
good.
Done
that's
a number
good stuff.
Over the way it was, he didn't need any help.
Nobody works a crowd like Bill Clinton. I mean, he is the consummate Democratic politician.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I think a lot of people find frustrating in Hillary is the fact that she's not. Everything Bill is, she isn't.
Yeah,
he's Southern.
I agree.
He's Southern. He's
the person he is.
He's personable. He connects with people. He looks everybody in the eye, and he sounds like your neighbor when he talks to you.
I hope not.
Hillary, not so much.
Yeah, but I hope he ain't like my neighbor.
Well, okay, probably. Yeah, wrong. Wrong analogy on that particular, but
on
you get
that part, yeah.
Yeah.
He
talks and he sounds like he's on the front porch.
Yeah, he really does. He is. I'm just fascinated. I listen to him on his different speeches he makes on television. And he's got, it's hard to beat a man with a Rhodes Scholar, let alone one that's got common sense with it.
Yeah, look, he is what he is. He is America's last democratically elected president. We think about that, Ed. We have not had a democratically elected president in this country since 1996.
Yeah. And you know what? Of all the people in the world, there's only three that's in the category with him, with me, and that's Harry Truman and John Kennedy, Jack Kennedy, whatever you want to call him. And
FDR.
See, I was still in diapers in his time, but he was still a president when I was in this.
Yeah, in a lifetime, I got Jimmy Carter and I got Bill Clinton. See, I have tremendous respect for Jimmy Carter. And I'm sick to death of the way the media and the right wing have treated him. Because you know what? If we had listened to Jimmy Carter in 1976, Ed, we would not be paying $3.75 a gallon for gasoline now.
Right. And the only mistake that I saw he ever made, he got the farmers to buy more land and grow more crops, and then the Russians canceled out on it. And that's the only mistake, and they hold that against him, plus he didn't have the ability to free those hostages. And
Ed, I mean,
you can tell us.
Not necessary. I don't want to run off on a history band or anything, but even that was not his fault, because we know now. I mean, it's not even controverted. It's not a debatable issue. It's a fact that Ronald Reagan promised that he would sell them arms for them to use in their war against the Iraqis, in exchange for them holding the hostages until the election was over and he was in office.
I know that Reagan got them freed some way through hook or crook.
Well, but he also got them.
I don't know how.
He got them. I mean, that's what the whole arms for hostages thing was about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after all that time, well, we will not trade arms for hostages. That's exactly what they did.
Have you ever seen a Republican that wouldn't lie now and then?
Yeah, well, how do you know when a Republican's lying? You know, when his lips are moving.
Yeah.
But, you know, he actually made it, because he knew that if the hostages were freed while Jimmy Carter was president, that he was toast.
He would win again.
Yeah. And so they dummied that game up. You know, he was the great communicator. Oh, he was like America's grandfather. It was morning in America. Oh, Ronald Reagan. Oh, want to put him on? I want to put him on the dime. You know, everybody seems to forget that the hostages in that embassy in Tehran spent more time in captivity as a direct and proximate result of the actions of Ronald Reagan.
Yeah,
and it wouldn't bother me a bit if
you're familiar with that. Plenty, you're 100% more familiar with that. But I know that something crooked and dirty went on to get those hostages free.
But Jimmy Carter started telling America that we had to get our energy house in order, that we had to get serious about it, that we had to take the American dependence on foreign oil with extreme gravity as a national security issue, and if we had done all of that, we would not be in the fix we are today. But instead, the Sean Hannitys and the Limbaughs and the Bortzes and all of the savage wieners and all those sickening freaks on the right wing talk about what a weak man Jimmy Carter was. Jimmy Carter was 47th in his graduating class of some several hundred at the United States Naval Academy, Ed. John McCain was 894th out of 899.
Yeah. I met him in Charleston. I was on a committee that received him in Charleston back when he was president. And, you know, I just got a sense that he was really a good, you know, he was a gentleman first. And then he wanted everything, you know, he wanted it right. There's no doubt in my mind that he didn't want things to be right, and he didn't have, and right now it shows, because of these houses he's helping build for the poor and looking out after them. What do people want? You know, I don't understand it. If
Well, if Jimmy Carter would have talked about welfare queens and played a few race cards like Reagan did, you know, his remember, he was a Southern Baptist. For heaven's sakes, he was a Sunday school teacher. And the right wing that professes to crawl across ground glass for a so-called man of God vilifies him like the devil itself.
Yeah.
It's sickening, Ed.
Well, he was, you know, I'm sorry I left him out, but he was, you know, I guess of all of them, though, and this is an opinion, and I was a political leader in the Union, but in my opinion, probably this nation would be miles ahead if Kennedy had lived. That's, you know, I don't know of anybody that could have done.
Well, look, you get 8 years of John Kennedy, which puts Richard Nixon in a real spot in 1968. Vietnam likely is not going on by 1968, so all of that upheaval is. Oh yeah. The entire spectrum of American history is changed at the squeeze of a trigger.
Yeah, but like you said, we're going to have to vote for one of the two evils. But I'll still make you a bet that West Virginia don't go for Obama.
Oh, I know it won't.
And
we got way too many racists in this state. We got way too many bigots in this state.
But the race card ain't playing a part for me.
Well, the race card technically isn't playing in West Virginia because West Virginia doesn't have a significant African American community.
Yeah. Well, if they did, they'd
statistically speaking,
still be white against black or black against white. It still would be. It's going on, and Bob, it'll still take two generations as the world stands to get rid of this this attitude.
It I don't know that
taking your help to get rid of some of the ideas I had, and I'm admitting it before the whole world, I guess, you know, on the radio, that where I stood, and I wouldn't have never thought of voting for a black. But if it's my idea of what is really best for the country, then I don't care what color they are. They can be polka dot and I'd vote for them. But
Isn't that the definition of, you know, we hear a lot of these days about the blue dog Democrats who vote with Bush, but isn't that the definition of the old school yeller dog Democrat? I'd vote for an old yeller dog before I'd vote for a Republican.
Well, I would. But do you know where a yellow dog come from?
No, I don't.
Used to be in the coal mines. Now, this is way, I know this is way before your time. The man getting a job had to sign what they call a yellow dog contract, that he would not talk union, would not vote union, and would not have anything to do with any union movement at all. And you signed that, and it was legal. And they still have yellow dog contracts.
Oh, yes, they do. Actually,
so
they've made a comeback.
That's where yellow dog come from. That was your first, you know, because they call themselves that. You know, we had to sign a yellow dog contract to get a job. And they were really, a lot of them was union people. So that's the, you know.
Yeah.
That's as far back as I can take it, Bob.
But, it, you know, Hillary is going to, and I said I wasn't going to get all wrapped up in the primary tonight, but daggone.
You can't help it.
Hillary's going to win West Virginia, Hillary's going to win Kentucky, and Hillary is going to lose the nomination. It's over, Ed. It is over.
You know what was passed out over today?
What's that?
That if Hillary wins, and it was Obama people passing it out, and a guy come around taking it up. If Obama wins, I wish I'd have kept that and mailed it to you. Said if Obama wins, there'll be riots in Chicago. I mean, if Hillary wins, there'll be riots in Chicago.
Now wait a minute. Let me. There were people. Why would there be riots in Chicago if
Hillary won?
Yeah.
Because they. Regardless, I think Obama should win. It would be discrimination.
Well, at this point in time, if Hillary does get the nomination, there will be. It will be a matter of political skullduggery.
Well, I'm not for this electoral college to start with, but the popular vote should, the man should go in. The thing I got against these so-called super delegates is Bob Kincaid and Ed Travis got one vote. Those guys has got two. They get to vote in the primary and they get to vote again. And the other vote is more powerful than the first one.
I think when this is all said and done, the first thing that the Democratic National Committee should do is abolish the superdelegates altogether. They weren't put in place for this purpose. The superdelegates were created as a sort of an honorarium, if you will, for the elder statesmen of the Democratic Party.
But now it's used as a weapon over their head.
That's right.
And I'm going to tell you something else. I don't know how I'll vote or who will run or what against Rockefeller and Ray Hall, but I'm thinking about not voting for either one of them again because they come out ahead of the people in the state to see where the state stood.
Rockefeller and Ray Hall are two of the biggest coal whores this state has.
Mm-hmm.
And I hold that against them. Now, Rockefeller has a couple of people running against him for the Democratic primary. I don't know a blessed thing about him. One of them's from Boone County. He may be crazier than a run-over dog for all I know, but...
Well, if they support the right thing, talk the right thing, I'll vote for them. You know, I'll waste a vote probably because Rockefeller will spend another $11 million to get there.
Yeah, I got a solicitation from him in my email today asking me...
I got a card from him.
Yeah, asking me could I please contribute to his reelection campaign.
Ain't that a crock? Yeah.
Honest to God, I pulled that thing out of the mailbox, Ed, and I kicked a rock into the road when I saw it.
Yeah. But you ought to answer back some way and... ask him to make your house payment for you.
Well, but how about that? I could use a new heating and ventilation system. I don't know how many more seasons that thing's going to work. The air conditioner's already shot on it. We need a new roof here too, Jay. How about one of those while you're at it?
Yeah, I haven't got any. You know they're running. It's them. It's running, and you give them a few bucks. And what they do when they get in there, they fix things that are against you, like workman's comp and unemployment.
Well, look at what, I mean, I've got stuff, I hold Samuel Alito against Robert Byrd, and I will hold it against him for as long as he remains on this earth
well,
and thereafter.
Byrd ain't one of my favorite people to start with.
He helped,
always been.
We could have filibustered and kept Samuel Alito off of the Supreme Court of the United States, but Byrd, because he was taking pressure from the phony religious right wing, knuckled under and caved in to him. Then, and so that gives you Alito on the Supreme Court, and we've seen what kind of a justice he turned out to be, attacking Brown versus Board of Education and things like that, women's rights, a worker's right to fair pay. You know, he's been part of that. And then Rockefeller turns around, and he votes with the telecoms to allow them to continue spying on us without any threat of being sued by us when we catch them at it.
I remember.
Now,
well.
Has that man earned my vote?
Bob, I can remember in the 50s when there was pretty close to freedom in this country, and it has gone to hell in a handbasket as far as your privacy. You know, there. If somebody told me and played our conversation back to us right now, it wouldn't surprise me a bit.
Ed, I know that they're listening. The people who are associated with this network have spotted listeners that come from the National Security Administration. Okay, they don't have to listen in on the phone call. Anybody who wants to can listen to it on the internet, and we are listened to every night by the federal government. And that's not me being paranoid.
I really wish that someone would call and ask me why I did that, why I listened to it, and why I participate. I'd really like to lift them out of their chair. I've had a few calls, you know, on different solicitations, and they aren't even supposed to be calling my number. And as quick as I tell them I'm Democrat, and who I'm going to vote for, They don't even answer. They haven't got the gall to even answer. They just hang up.
Now, I tell you what, I said, God knows I've hung up on a few myself, but I tell you what, I joked about, and I wasn't joking, I'm pretty disgusted, about staying away on primary day, but I just realized something. I will go into that booth on primary day, Ed, if for no other reason than to vote for two people for Supreme Court of this state who are not Elliot Spike Maynard.
We will not vote for Spike Maynard.
That SOB has got to go. I don't care if he calls himself a Democrat. I have watched him for 12 long years, and the only Democrat he's ever acted in favor of or voted for is Elliot Spike Maynard. He's a piece of crap.
Same deal with Shirley Love. He don't hit a... Now, he wanted a highway, old 16, named Hank Williams Jr., and he wanted to make sure that people had the right to get their hunting dogs back if they got on other private property. But anything else Shirley Love has done has been a JFK plan, you know, just for kin folks. So that's the way that dirty dog is. He was waiting in the wings. I told you, you know, I told Bill Clinton, I got to shake hands with him. I said, Bill Clinton, I said, don't let Shirley Love get his hand in your pocket. And he said, who? And I said, Shirley Love. He's a state senator.
You know what might have taken Bill back on that, and I'm not being mean about this. His first name. He might have thought you were talking about some woman getting her hand in his pocket, and it might have. I imagine Bill's a little touchy about that these days. Bless his heart.
Yeah, okay. But I told him he was a state senator to be an ex-state senator. And I said, but don't let him get his hand in your pocket. I said, he done it to John Kerry and John Edwards and then used the money for his own thing. I told him, I said, Rockefeller almost got him for the way he used his money. And Shirley Love, when they run, Shirley Love backed a guy named Cleve Benedict.
Oh, I remember Cleve well.
And Shirley Love had his signs turned upside down in his yard, and there's a guy in Fayetteville that Shirley Love's cousin will tell you all about if he would call in. But he'd rather whip his hind end than to talk about it.
Mercy.
So he's a piece of crap, Shirley. I got him on my mind. I seen him look like a big bent over bear walking around over there waiting to be the parasite that he is.
Yeah, just And for folks outside West Virginia, this is a little bit of inside baseball. But his claim to fame, Shirley Love, was announcing professional wrestling on WOAY TV.
Saturday Night Wrestling.
Saturday Night Wrestling.
Yep.
Coming to the Fayette County Armory.
You know, and that shows you where we're at, Bob. That shows you where West Virginia is at. The people that watch that kind of crap. What is the mentality level? They'd have to speed it up to stop. I know where he's at, and you got these guys walk up to him, these coon hunters, and I don't have anything against coon hunters, really, but tobacco juice running down one side of their chin. Hey, Curry, you going to go rabbit hunting with us Saturday? You know, that's the mentality level that we're dealing with when you deal with Shirley Love.
And about 90% of the West Virginia Senate.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, you said we talked about Alabama being a century behind one night, and you got some of these folks, and that don't mean they're bad people. That means that they're just not knowledgeable of what's going on. And that's where we at in the good old state of West Virginia.
Yes, it is. Ed, good to hear from you.
All right, Bob, thank you for your time, and I hope things, and if they haven't got settled in your mind where you're at, I hope you get things really settled to where you're comfortable with.
Well, I'll go vote in the primary, and, you know, I said last night I wish Hillary would go ahead and smell the coffee and realize that she's licked and drop out so that I could, in good conscience, go into the voting booth and vote for the man that I was for all along in the first place, after Dennis Kucinich, John Edwards, because he's still on the ballot.
Yeah. Oh, he is?
Yeah, he is.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I got my sample ballot in the mail, and there he is.
Who is sending you sample ballots, Bob?
Well, I got a sample ballot from one of these fellas running for sheriff. But if Hillary was to go ahead and drop out, and I knew that it would be safe to do it, I would feel real good about going into the voting booth and voting for John Edwards.
I think it'd be, I mean, the whole public has showed where they stood on him, and I'm probably for him more than anybody you know. But,
well, I can't do it unless I know that Hillary's out.
Yeah.
Because she's just done, in the last couple of weeks, she's done a couple of things that I cannot in any way associate my name with or my vote.
Well, I got two or three things against Obama, and one is that he lingered too long to drop that so-called pastor that he's got.
See, I give him a pass on that because I expect preachers to talk crazy stuff. And actually, the other reason I give him a pass on it, Ed, is because I've actually heard what Reverend Wright said. I didn't hear a sound bite on the TV. I went and I heard what he actually said. And when he was talking about the chickens coming home to roost on 9/11,
mm-hmm.
Those weren't his words. He was quoting the United States ambassador. But the for-profit media won't tell you that. They'll hang those words in Reverend Wright's mouth and claim that they're his own. But he was using the words of a United States ambassador when he said that.
Is that right?
Yes, sir. I have read what that man has said, and I do not disagree with one word of it.
Huh.
So, you know, we have been Reverend Wrighted to death because it is nothing short of a plain old-fashioned right-wing Republican smear job.
Yeah. Well, I guess that I got took in by it because I didn't, you know, I listened to the stuff of what he said, and it was anti-American, and you know, you can still be a veteran and be a turncoat.
I don't think there's not a penny's worth of turncoat in Jeremiah Wright.
Well,
he's a decorated Marine three times over, left the Marines to join the Navy Medical Corps. Attended an ailing Lyndon Baines Johnson, was personally commended by Lyndon Baines Johnson for his work. And you know what? He's earned the right to say most anything he wants to in my book.
Yeah.
And you know, the fact of the matter is, we take Jerry Falwell, who is roasting in hell, thankfully, and Pat Robertson, who with any luck will be soon. And they sat there when the smoke hadn't cleared from the World Trade Center, Ed, and they said 9/11 was brought on because God had removed his veil of protection of the United States because of the gays and the liberals like you and me and the American Civil Liberties Union and the feminists. And
well,
nobody.
You know how I feel about.
I do, but the thing is,
and Dobson too.
That got mentioned for a couple of days, and then it moved on.
Yeah, well, and then you had that other one. Who was he that said that he grew up on the farm and he didn't have nobody to kiss but the donkey?
Yeah, that guy, the George.
Well, them kind of guys don't know which end to kiss either.
Well, he went on and said some other nasty things, too, if we're thinking about the same guy. But the thing is, we didn't have ourselves a purple polka-dotted blue-screaming hissy and kittens with crocheted tails, Ed, when Robertson and Falwell said that evil stuff. And they were still welcome at the White House, welcome with George Bush.
Oh, yeah.
On the other hand, however, an African-American man goes to church for 20 years and seldom misses a Sunday, And suddenly he is to be indicted for it and not upheld to the American people for being a churchgoer. It's this, what I'm trying to get at here. It's the same thing the sons of bitches on the right did to Jimmy Carter, Southern Baptist Sunday school teacher, and he was a godless heathen as compared with Ronald Reagan, who scarcely if ever set foot in church.
I know their record, Bob.
Not
to be desired.
Yeah, the Reverend Wright thing doesn't bother me. What he said doesn't bother me. I even understand what he said about the U.S. government and AIDS. Because that makes
some questions with me.
I don't think the United States government turned loose AIDS within the African American community or within the gay community or within any community. But I do know for a fact that it was burning America up for 5 years before Ronald Reagan so much as mentioned the word. And so, yes, the federal government is at fault for the harm and the hell and the misery that AIDS caused in this country and still causes.
Yeah. Well, I think it could have been a lot more control of it right now if they would have taken the... of course, we had Nancy saying, just say no. You know, that's what it amounted to everything that...
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what her astrologer told her to say, so... Yeah, but that was okay with the right-wingers, too, even though if you caught Barack Obama reading his horoscope in the Chicago Tribune, the right-wing Rod Parsley and Pastor Hagee and all these other right-wing religious freaks would scream that he was a Satanist.
Yeah. Well, Parsley is another damn Jerry Farwell and a nut in my book.
Well, he's past being a nut in mine. He's downright evil, Ed.
Yeah. Well, and when are we ever going to get the law policed that where these preachers cannot use the church as a political base? When is it going to happen?
Well, it's already there. It's in the law. It's in the tax code.
I said, when are they going to get it policed, though?
Yeah. When are they going to enforce it?
Yeah.
Another fine reason in my book for making sure that no Republican occupies the White House, because the IRS is a branch of the executive department. If the President of the United States says, listen, you catch a preacher politicking from the pulpit, you don't ask a second time, you pull their tax-exempt status and let the little start paying taxes like they ought to in the first place if they want to be playing politics.
Yeah. Well, they got a case going on now. Over one of the churches, but I don't know which one it is, Bob. I'd like to be able to.
Well, they did go after a liberal church out in California. That's a fact.
Yeah. I didn't know. Has it been settled though?
Has it? I don't.
Have they taken any action?
Fact is, I don't know. Hey, Ed, if you don't mind, let me put you back on hold here. I got everything all lit up now.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye now, Ed. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
That's our pal, Ed, right here in Fayette County with us. And let's move along here. Hey, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
One of the things while Nancy was saying just say no was her husband was arranging to push crack on the inner cities of our country. So don't talk to me about Reagan. He's roasting in hell, which is just about where he
belongs. Well, I was going to say at some point in my conversation with Ed, Susan, it would not bother me one bit if every surviving hostage from the embassy in Tehran stood in a circle around Ronald Reagan's grave and took a pee.
Yeah, you and me both. Anyway, that was not the reason I called. It's a piece of election news, but it has nothing to do with Hillary.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with Barack Obama. It's a story on the Huffington Post, and it says that on the Today Show, Cindy McCain has declared that she will never release her tax forms.
Even
if she becomes first lady.
Yeah, wasn't that one of the, it was one of those Charlton Heston moments, wasn't it, Susan, where, you know, they can have my tax forms when they pry them from my cold, dead, well-manicured fingers?
Yeah. Talk about arrogance.
I know. They sure didn't, I'm sure, you know, the Today Show being what it is, you know, with the for-profit media and everything, I'm sure it was, okay, next question, but they sure didn't give Teresa Hines that kind of a pass, did they?
Oh, hell no. What I want to know is, you know, well, first of all, I want to know why they got, let her get away with it, and secondly, why dear old Cindy thinks she is in a position to get away with it. What makes her so special? Because her daddy pushed a bunch of beer? Big honking deal.
Indeed. Yeah, but they're royalty. They're royalty, and they're right-wingers, and they're Republicans, and therefore we can't ask them hard questions. You know, maybe it's because the for-profit media understands that Republicans aren't very sharp in the first place and not very capable of answering hard questions. You know, especially...
Hey, Bob, there's something that really irritates me.
Yeah?
Who coronated these people?
My
royalty.
Yeah, they're not mine either, but they certainly think they are.
Well, they may be a bunch of parvenu rich people, but to me, they're not. Now, if you want to talk about royalty, you got to have a pedigree that goes back at least 500 years. These people don't.
No, they don't.
Let's face it, you and I have got better pedigrees than she does.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
Let's face it, we're Scots. What do we think?
Brother, I know.
But it's just the whole thing just, yeah.
I know. Sickening, isn't it?
Yes, very. But I thought I'd bring up your old Cindy because she...
Well, I'm glad you did because it was in the stack, but it wasn't high on the list. But I'm simply not surprised by it.
We've been married 28 years and we've always filed separate tax returns and they're my business and none of yours.
Well, it becomes our business when
up any money for John.
He flies around on her plane.
That makes it our business to cough up the return.
Yeah, see, this is the difference, say, between the right wing's hissy over Monica, which was a private, sexual, consensual affair. And John McCain flying around on his wife's plane, using it for political gain. Because on the one hand, you've got actual political filth and corruption in the form of McCain, and you've got a privacy issue regarding something that's nobody's business in the form of Clinton.
Yeah. And I do have to disagree with Ed about one thing.
What's that?
Okay, Bubba was a very good president. I'll give him that.
You mean Clinton?
Yeah.
Don't say the best Republican president we ever had. Don't do that.
I'm sorry, but to me he was.
He made a lot of mistakes. Some of them being NAFTA, the media ownership rules, the relaxation of regulations on the banking industry, welfare reform. I can think of a lot of them.
Yeah.
But
the man who has a genius for politics.
But the Republican Party themselves proved more than often enough that he was not one of them.
Well, yeah, I understand that. But, you know, he's
What he was not a liberal. He got plastered and pilloried and taken from pillar to post for being a liberal by the right wing when what he was a plain, old-fashioned, middle-of-the-road Southern Democrat.
Yeah. And I will give him this. The man has a genius for politics. He is a born politician.
He is a born orator. He is a brilliant man.
Yes.
You know, I saw him speak in Charleston a little less than a year ago, and he had every single person in that room, and I mean there were about 10,000 of them. He had every one of them with the little hairs standing up on the back of their neck talking about what America still can be.
Yeah, whether you support him or not, it doesn't matter. He's a genius.
Yeah, and you know what? If I had a chance to vote for him in November, you know what I'd do? I'd vote for him in November.
It would be really, really a hard decision for me too. I got to give him that.
Yeah. If I had a chance to vote for Al Gore in November, I would gladly vote for Al Gore in November. And I tell you truly, if Hillary would have the grace to go ahead and drop out, I would feel really good about Primary Tuesday this coming, because I really could. I could go in knowing that she was no longer scorching the earth of the Democratic Party, and I could go in and do what I had wanted to do in the first place and vote for John Edwards.
Uh-huh. I really wish we could have had Kucinich, though.
No, I do, too. Kucinich, Edwards, either one.
He looked like an elf, but the man's got a brain. He just won't quit.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does. But they came after his house seat, and that's why he had to bail out early this time.
Yeah, and...
Now, interestingly, and speaking of going after house seats, interestingly, Ron Paul may find himself out of a job if he's not careful.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because the people in his district in Texas kind of resent all the time that he spent running around raising money for himself when he could have been bringing home the bacon for his congressional district.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I got a few more stacked up here, Susan. But thanks for mentioning Cindy McCain. Oh, well, thanks and no thanks.
Yeah.
They can have my tax returns when they pry them from my cold, dead, well-manicured fingers.
Yes. With the French tips.
Too much detail. Never had a manicure, so I wouldn't know. But, no, I'll take your word for it.
Well, I haven't either, but I've heard. You have a nice night.
All right.
Give my love to Agnes.
Sure will. See you, Susan.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. News Ninja Susan. Cindy McCain. You know what? Between the two of them, John and Cindy, you're going to learn to say ick. If they become the first couple, she's gonna make Pickles look classy, and he's going to make W look like a blooming genius. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Dave from Humboldt, California.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Oh, great, and I so much appreciate your insights. One, I fear there is a possibility, I hate to even bring it up, though, Hillary remains in this race, and the one possibility, the one possible hope for her is if somehow Obama doesn't live through the general election or certainly to be inaugurated president, that...
I can't even stand the contemplation of that, Dave.
I know, and I don't want to either. I want to go to another issue. And that is Obama's Reverend Hagee. And I, like you, think that we may be, again, being terribly misinformed on this. They've taken bits and pieces out of what that man has said and used it against Obama. But I don't think that this man climbed right back into a cave and pulled a rock over it. I think he's still available and still free for comment. And I believe what his real message is, our government right now stinks. It's corrupt beyond belief, and if you plan to go in there and be more of the same, you're going to have me to contend with. I think that's how I condense his message. And if that is what he's saying, why are not the Bob Kincaid, the Guy James, getting him on the phone and saying, would you please clarify for us, what is your message? What are you saying to Obama? Because the rest of the press don't want to hear a damn word he's going to say. They just... You know, picked whatever they want to use against him, and they don't want to hear anymore. But some of us should.
Oh, I agree, Dave. But I am a very, very small fish in a very, very large pond, and I doubt my call would even go through.
Well, it'd be worth a try, I think, to see, because I don't think the mainstream media is attempting it. They've got what they want. They're going to use it how they want to. Anyway, I know you got other callers, and I know you're conversation radio, but I want to be brief today because I don't like it when other people are waiting a long time while we go beyond what might be. I think I've said what I wanted to say, and I love what you're doing.
Okay, thanks, Dave. I appreciate it.
You too.
All right, bye now. We're trying, you know, the little fish is trying to grow into a shark, but it's just, it's going to take a little while. Well, I did have folks waiting, but they had to go. I have been educated. If you want to know the definition of a yellow dog Democrat, well, here you go. The yellow dog contract that Ed mentioned, they're still called yellow dog contracts because they are anti-labor contracts, and it stems from the idea that only cowards would sign a contract with anti-labor provisions in it. But, even further, the definition in history of the yellow dog, and for those of you who have heard it, like me, all of your life, you might find this interesting. A yellow dog Democrat is a staunch loyalist to the Democratic Party. These days, the term is widely recognized as an expression of regard, and as such, it is only used in a manner of praise. Yellow dog Democrats embody loyalty. This is a trait that should never, ever be taken for granted by any party, nor by any individual, for that matter. The Democratic Party recognizes this, thus correctly acknowledges the Yellow Dog Democrat as some of their best friends. Now, this thing says Democrat Party, so it makes me think that it was probably written by someone from the right wing, because that's that old Newt Gingrich redefining words business, where you were supposed to say Democrat Party, and then two words later you were supposed to say rapist, and then you were supposed to say a few words later, child molester. Then a few words later, you were supposed to say, godless communist. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. But anyway, as it's laid out here, the term yellow dog Democrat blossomed during all the hoopla which surrounded the 1928 election when Al Smith ran for president against Herbert Hoover. My mother used to smile when she recalled being held in her father's arms in 1928, and they'd say to her, Margie, who you voting for? And she'd say, Al Smith. During that campaign between Al Smith and Hubert Hoover, Senator Tom Heflin of Alabama declined to back the Roman Catholic Al Smith, governor of New York. It was even worse than that, according to this. Senator Heflin decided to back Herbert Hoover instead. Senator from Alabama. Damn it. Heflin's controversial actions were considered to be so disgusting that a large number of Alabamians took vehement disagreement with Senator Heflin, and thereby arose the popular saying, I'd vote for a yaller dog if he ran on the Democratic ticket. And thus was born the definition of a party loyalist. And I come from a long line of yaller dog Democrats. Not because of the party, but because the Republican has not been born who represents anything approaching my values. Jay Rockefeller, ostensibly a Democrat, a senator from West Virginia, also isn't very good at sharing my values. There are a lot of Democrats out there who don't share my values.
the governor of West Virginia, Joe Manchin, does not share my values. That man sits down and breaks bread with the hateful pro-fetus crowd every year. You know, the American Taliban crowd. But I am a yeller dog Democrat, and for the most part, I'll vote for an old yeller dog before I'll vote for some soulless, godless, motherless, pond scum sucking, pig licking. And as disgusted as I am with her, I still say that were she to be the nominee, which she will not be, cannot be, I'd vote for Hillary Clinton in November. Might gall me, might sicken me, but I'd do it. Because I would recognize that, among other things, as I've noted, and you're probably tired of hearing, I could at least trust her to get it right on Supreme Court appointments and not worry about having to have another damned Alito, another cussed Roberts, another benighted Scalia, another fool Thomas put on the court to screw up the lives not of me and not of my children, but of my grandchildren. So that's that. Email. Bill Clinton, was he too much in the center for me? Sure. Did I enjoy his triangulation as it relates to important issues? Hell no. But taken in the context of the times and the vagaries of a repig-licking Congress, could any Democratic president have done a better job of leading our nation? Now, really, and this is a damn fine point, really, facing the snakes and the vipers of that god-awful Limbaugh Congress, America the way it's meant to be, remember that? Could any politicians alive have created what Bill created in his 8 years? All others plugged into Bill's slot would have failed miserably. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. I do. And that is why it grieves me so thoroughly to see Hillary Clinton pulling this crap that she's pulling. I mean, and you know, don't take my word for it. Let's get this out of the way. This, listen carefully, is what Hillary Clinton said.
How does Hillary Clinton win the nomination?
Well, Kathy, you know, there was just an AP article posted that found how Senator Obama's support among working hard-working Americans, white Americans, is weakening again, and how the, you know, whites in both states who had not completed college were supporting me, and in independence, I was running even with him and doing even better with Democratic-leaning independents. I have a much broader base to build a winning coalition on.
There it is. I didn't say it. I'm not reading her mind. I'm not interpreting it. Working, hard-working Americans, white Americans. See, a phrase like that sort of excludes the African-American community and anybody else who's not white, who's out there every day busting their ass, carrying the CEOs and the CFOs and the COOs and the presidents of the boards of directors on their backs. I've tried, and I've succeeded, I think, in learning to see America as it really is. And when I look at America, I see two kinds of people. And let me let you in on a little secret. Skin color has nothing to do with it. I see people who work for a living and people who don't. I don't see hardworking black Americans or hardworking white Americans or hardworking Latino Americans or hardworking Asian Americans or hardworking Irish, Scottish, Slavic, French, German, Italian, or Native Americans. I see workers. And because I know a few of them, I've got a pretty damn good idea about what their lives are like and the struggles they go through. The struggles we go through. There are working people and people who don't work. And I don't care if you make $100,000 a year and somebody signs your check every week or 2 weeks. You, by God, are a worker. And you are helping to carry America on your back. I don't care if you pick fruit or vegetables or work at the Jiffy Lube or if you're an associate in a certified public accounting firm. I don't care if you're a lawyer or a doctor. If somebody else is signing your check, you're a worker. And the sooner you figure it out, the better off you are, because then you'll start voting your own interest instead of voting the foolishness that gets shoveled at you on a daily basis from the right wing. Oh, dear. There he goes again. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, it's Sandra. Hey, listen, I couldn't resist.
Okay.
Okay, so she said white people. I mean, has she lost her mind?
I mentioned this to our buddy ELO, one of the moderators in the chat room, and she said, my goodness, has she bumped her head? And I said, no, she hasn't bumped. She's jumped, and it's not her head. It's the shark. She's jumped the shark.
Because I don't even know where to begin. It's just, she really is. I mean, I think this Negro has flipped out because she really ain't gonna win. I hope she don't do nothing bad to herself.
Oh God.
Because she is talking some BS. It's like, are you kidding me? Do you think that
when I read this, I went running around all over the series of tubes trying to find out that it was a bunch of made-up BS.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I have to say, I initially thought, oh, wow, no way. And I looked it up, too.
And then, you know, there's the audio, and that's her voice. And
yeah,
this isn't the thing last week with whether or not it was a hoax from the 1992 movie The War Room. This is an interview where she sat down with USA Today and said it. She said it. She really, really said it.
It's just sort of, you know, after that, you know, that last election in Louisiana where that Republican got beat, right?
Yeah, by the other Republican?
No, it was beaten by the Democrat.
Yeah, that's what they told you.
Yeah, I get it. But the idea that there was a huge turnout of black voters on that one.
Yeah.
And, you know, which tells me that the black electorate, if you want to call it, is pretty energized. I really don't think the Democratic Party is going to hand the nomination to some divisive bitch like that at this point.
Well, Sandra, where did this notion come from? The African American electorate is the single most loyal voting bloc that the Democratic Party has.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Period.
Is energized now, too. And don't tell me that, oh, well, they're just voting for Obama because he's black. We ain't never had nobody else of color to vote for. We voted like everybody else in this country. So the double standards are just coming like rapid fire. You know, I'm sick to death of it. I don't even know where to begin by how abused the black voter is in this country. It's a joke. And to hear Hillary go off like this about, you know, her so-called white base, you know, makes her just sound like she's channeling Susan B. Anthony. Don't give the Negro the vote first. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
And I don't, you know, I hate to see it because it's just like, what is she doing? You know what I mean?
Well, what's
it doesn't make any sense what she's doing. I mean, she has to be a smarter person than this.
Is this a total? I don't know how to characterize it, Sandra, because doesn't she hope to go back and be reelected senator from New York? Does she not think that this stuff is going to get played back, even if she doesn't get to be president, that it's not going to be played back the next time she runs for Senate?
Well, the scourge, yeah. I mean, she, you know, if she had bowed out gracefully a couple of days ago, I'm sure her stock in the party would rise really quickly. Everything would be forgotten, and she could be the leader of the Senate or whatever other sort of role she has for herself, right? But I don't know what she thinks. You know, I just don't understand. I mean, I have, like, you know, I can deal with politics as well as the next person. But what she's doing now, it don't even make any sense, Bob. You know, because the population is just not that stupid. You may have pockets of yahoos, but most of us, you know, our biases only go so far before we can, you know, read that. That's crazy what she's doing, you know?
I don't know if I can give life to what's been going on inside my brain for a long time now, where I have earnestly and honestly and sincerely tried to stand neutral in this contest and have actually really spent time doing some skull sweat stuff and reading policies and going to websites and, you know, and this is better than that and this idea is better than that and, you know, with the scales and weighing things and... But I didn't jump. I was pushed into declaring for Obama.
Well, yeah, no. I mean, to be honest, me too, because I told you it was Kucinich. And then Edwards, and then I just looked at both of these two, and I thought, you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Because you know, I'm a big reader of the, I follow, not that I follow, but I'm more in line with the Black Agenda Report type of politics. Do you know that website?
Yes, I do.
Well, you know, so, I am not on the Obama bandwagon, you know, he's just another politician. But I don't know what Hillary is just showing something that is really very ugly because
it is, isn't it, Sandra? It is. It's ugly.
It's really ugly because, see, unfortunately, white people in this country are so prone to being scared of anything that will possibly make a dent in their perceived power base. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
And it's very easy to appeal to that.
And I mean, look, one of the people that I read and respect is Paul Krugman, as far as the for-profit media is concerned. Mm-hmm. Sharp as a tack, smart man, hits it 100% all the way out of the ballpark most of the time. And a long time ago, he said that Hillary was the far better liberal of the two. And you know what? I'm still about halfway inclined, if you're going to call either one of them a liberal. I was inclined to believe him because he based it on evidence, and yeah, I've still got Barack Obama out here swanning around West Virginia with what I said are the two biggest coal whores in this state, and you know, how am I supposed to feel about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I also am like real concerned about his groveling and you know holding court with the Wall Street people. You see what I'm saying? It's like, well,
yes.
He's getting millions of dollars from, you know, small donors, like just the American people. Well, why are you know, you need to disconnect from these huge institutional contributors, you know. You should be able to be fine with just the people. And if you were with just the people, I think I would look at him a lot better. But because he's running with big coal and big finance, you know, I just have to file that away. You know, and also, he's not addressing the incarceration issue when 10% of black folks are locked up.
Yeah, but see, he's in a spot with that with issues like that, Sandra, because, you know, if he actually comes out and advocates for real, meaningful examination of equality issues, he's liable to get called angry again.
Well, no, I understand, but as a, you know, I'm not going to be sort of, okay, there's a black person in the White House, so, you know, if there's some issues that these black people are all voting for them, you know, en masse, which I can understand, but the incarceration thing it should be a number one issue for black people because so many of us are, like, literally behind bars.
Yes. What's the statistic that an African American male at the age of 18 has about a 3 times greater likelihood of winding up behind bars in the next 3 years than in college?
Yeah, and, you know, and also just the sheer numbers that, you know, 925,000 of the people in prison are black. You know what I mean? Then if you look at the population, it literally is 10%. So if you had 10% of the white population behind bars, that's like 20 million, right? You understand?
Yeah, because it's horrifying enough, frankly, of any color, that we've got 1%, actually slightly more than 1%.
I think we talked about this. The incarceration issue across the board should be dealt with because it's just a way of managing the underclass, if I can even use that term.
Yes.
It's a way of dealing with the lack of safety net and having the ability to vote for judges, which is problematic in this country.
Well, see, I have for a long time said that the legal system in this country, Sandra, is dedicated to what I call the three M's: managing money and morons. Because what the courts do is they protect the wealthy's money and they manage the morons. The people who don't have the common good sense not to whomp their wives or deal drugs. The drug laws is an entirely separate issue for me because, I mean, that's a six-hour show, how stupid it is. But, you know, the people who, if they walk by, in West Virginia, this is a classic case, there are some counties in West Virginia where if you own a four-wheeler and you don't chain it to an iron post in a concrete block in the ground every night, when you get up the next morning, it'll be gone because there are some people in this state who can't walk by an unattended four-wheeler without stealing it. I'm not kidding.
Wow.
And, you know, just the stupid things that get done, and we don't ever bother to take a look and say, you know, maybe this is an indication that the education system is failing in ways that we haven't even considered before. No, because America's got a punishment fetish, Sandra. We just say, oh, wow, these are bad people, and we must punish them. We must prove to ourselves how much better we are than them by warehousing them for the rest of their natural-born days. Ah, aren't we godly?
Well, yeah, no, I mean, it's a sick perversion of the system here, and that the only response to just about everything is to lock people up, and now we got the gas chambers and everything else revving up again. You know, they're about ready to start executing people en masse.
You know? I've got a story that's in my stack that I haven't touched yet. Captured on camera, police officers beat 3 men. Did you see this?
Oh, you mean in Philadelphia?
Yeah, in Philly.
Oh, yeah.
And frankly, it makes Rodney King look like a trip to the park.
No, that's all over. I mean, I'm not saying it's all over the internet, but a couple of sites that I go to regularly, yeah, they are sort of talking about it. And, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, I'm waiting for it to bubble up. But this society has been so militarized since the Rodney King thing, I wouldn't even be surprised, Bob, if we don't even get a look-see on that. I would not be surprised if we don't.
Hey, what was it, 2-3 weeks ago that we were talking about Sean Bell?
Well, yeah, and that's like, yeah, and people are like, yawn onto the next, you know, horror, you know? But the people who would normally protest that, I mean, it's just everything is just sort of beat down. Even the blacks in New York were like shrugging at this point. I don't mean because they weren't outraged, but people are really beat down. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the whole country, even the activist part of this country, the we are all just sort of looking at each other going, forget it, Jake, it's Chinatown.
Yeah, no. And it's just sort of, you know, I mean, you know, it's just sort of like, I saw that beat down with the cops. I just thought, wow, you know, this is just, yeah, I don't know what the heck it is, but I am sort of, once again, entertaining thoughts of buying a weapon, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and
and some canned food. I don't mean to be flippant, but...
No, I don't think you are.
I know about as much about survival stuff as nobody, but I can lock and load. Trust and believe that.
Yeah, look,
but,
beef,
know,
yeah, meat comes from the grocery store in my world, too. I mean, I haven't taken down and butchered any slow elk in a while.
Well, no, but I don't, you know, obviously, you know, I think I'd rather hit the dirt nap as opposed to trying to live like all that. But with that being said, it's just something, the energy right now, the lack of compassion, the sort of ugliness, and, you know, it's all just sort of starting to be a bit overwhelming, you know. When I start seeing the police, once they start acting like they are without any checks, that's not a good sign.
Yeah, well, this case in Philly is a classic example. It came a day after a cop had been shot. And
yeah, I know. I heard it, and the cop thing was horrible. I mean, the man was said, "Oh, just please tell my wife that I love her before he died."
Yeah.
It was very sad.
Your heart breaks. But here's three guys, here's three cops who drag people, here's cops who drag three men out of a car, none of whom are suspected of being involved in the shooting, and just beat the piss out of them because, you know, somebody's got it coming. And you know what? Later in the program, if you're still listening, I got another example of that from Iraq.
Mm.
I mean, this is a sickness that is crawling all over this country. I mean, whatever we're going to name it, however we're going to baptize it, Sandra, it has gone past epidemic and it is pandemic in this country.
No, and then we tie it back to some prominent national leader talking about how her opponent can't galvanize the crackers. You know what I'm saying? It all fits together. You know what I mean? That don't help.
Yeah, it does. And I guess by virtue of the fact that I know a little bit of history, and this is not me climbing up on my soapbox or anything, but when what you said, galvanizing the crackers, when you're doing that, you are engaging in something that has been going on in this country since before this country was a country. Because there was a time in the 17th century when the wealthy white landowners who had an Indian problem, a poor white problem, and an African slave problem all looked at each other and said, you know what? The best way that we can keep them from paying any attention to us and slitting our throats in the middle of the night is by getting them to slit each other's throats. And that's where our race problems came from. That's where the biggest part of the genocide against Indians came from. And here it is again. Oh, well, I represent white working people. Oh, my God.
Any black back then with any common sense is like, oh, no, I'm going to go fight for the British.
Yeah, or there was a long and proud tradition in the Indian nations of welcoming runaway slaves. One of the reasons that the federal government got so thoroughly pissed off at the Seminoles and drove them all the way from southern Georgia and north Florida down into the Everglades was because they openly encouraged African slaves to come and be part of the tribe.
Yeah, and a lot of them did, and, you know, you got a whole sort of, a different look about those Native people behind all that. Yeah, that's true. Any time that the people of color got together back then, yeah, it was grounds for them to slaughter and institute genocide and
I just happened to be doing some digging around earlier today, and I found this quote from Abraham Lincoln from like a couple of weeks before he was assassinated. Somebody they were trying to come up with what they were going to do about the freed slaves now that the war was over. And the entire Lincoln administration was coming unhinged. And I found this quote where Lincoln said, "If we have armed Negroes in the southern states, there will be a race war." And the final sentence of the quote was, "We've got to get rid of the Negroes."
Well, please, you know, I mean, there was a constant with Clay and that racist and his little group wanting to, you know, the Liberian thing. I mean, they wanted to separate the free blacks immediately because it's getting in the way of their slaving. I mean, it's just been going on for so long, and it's just kind of...
And, you know, you want to say, Sandra, that at some point you want to be a part of an America that can look up and go, we're past it now. You know, put the road sign up and we'll drive past it and we'll all stop and we'll have a celebration and say, all that crap is behind us now.
Yeah, but most people don't even know about it. That's part of the problem, unfortunately. You know, I mean, the fact that I can have a conversation and bring up Clay and know that you know who the hell I'm talking about, you know, it's just really rare, because who's concerned about the policy of the United States government in the 1830s? You know what I'm saying? In the 1818s.
Yeah.
But it is so pertinent because it just continues to go on and on. And I'm frankly quite sick of it.
No. I don't. At this point in time, I'm so far down the rabbit hole, Sandra, that nothing shocks me.
No, but I mean, everyone should be outraged by Hillary. She should. She knows better. See, that's the thing. It's like, no fool. What are you doing?
She does, and that's the thing that drives me nuts. She does have the background. She did do the work. Bill did the work. There was tremendous outreach.
Yeah, I mean, they had no problem cutting that throat. I've never seen anything like it. You know how they have sort of alienated. Especially, at least the black voters, you know.
Well, and some significant portion of the white voters too.
Well, yeah,
but then again,
know.
You know, the pollsters say, well, you know, the only reason that Mr. Kincaid, you're voting for Obama is because you're a pointy-headed egghead intellectual. You know, I'm so daggum white that I get a sunburn under the refrigerator bulb, okay, Sandra? And I am a redneck, and I am a hillbilly who just happens to be a little bit like his forebears and craves information and education. And
well, I mean, wasn't it Jefferson that said, if I had a choice between keeping the newspapers going and the government, I'd rather have the government go away?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like the information... And not knowing it is a new phenomena. Most of the people given a chance, you know, with the penny press and any sort of time information was disseminated in this country, things got for the better. And as they got better, you know, there's always some interest that shut it down because they couldn't make money. But that being said, you know, everything seems to be going to a perfect storm right now. You know, I keep thinking about my mother. I'm like, well, you know, every generation has their, like, oh, this was a hideous time or that was a hideous time. So I'm trying to see if I'm just out of whack, you know, or if things are really not right.
Well, all I can do is make reference to my father, who, at you know, he died at 82 years old. And he said, I lived through the Depression, and what's going on now is awful. Yeah, when you've got a World War II veteran who looks up and tells you that his brother who died in the south of France died for nothing, and that he risked his life for nothing in World War II, you know, it's pretty bad.
And that was his outlook on what he saw going on before he passed on?
Yeah, from the inauguration of George Bush forward. Because we would sit together in the living room and watch the news and talk together, and every day he would just tell me how heartbreaking it is.
That was a
tough dose to swallow, Sandra. I promise.
No, that's well tough, because I got the impression that period was really, really trying, you know.
It was trying, but they had hope, and they thought they were fighting for something.
Right.
You know, they were defeating the global march of fascism and saving democracy for the world. And, you know, the day he looked at me and said, you know, if you had told me in 1943 that I was going to be sitting here at, you know, 78 years old, and fascism would not be defeated, and it wasn't crushed, and it wasn't forever put asunder, and that it would be coming to America, he said, I wouldn't have gone.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, no, but it's just, the thing is, though, it just seems to be this small cabal, you know? I mean, it doesn't seem like it's a large portion of our society, either. That's
no, but it's not who they are, Sandra. It's where they are. It's this perfect storm of the Cheneys and the Bushes in the world, and their Vichy-like collaborators in the for-profit media, and their collaborators in the right-wing religion industry. And once, you know, once you've got all, and then you've got, you know, the corporatization of America and the corporate control and the shipping of jobs overseas, whenever you can point to someone else that isn't like you and say, oh, well, you know, your problems that the Mexicans took your job, boom, it's been repeated 100 times. Well, you know, the reason you can't move to the Mississippi River, move across the Mississippi River is because of the Indians. Well, they got to die. You know what I mean?
You know, it's like that whole term of Roosevelt, the whole economic royalist. Well, they seem to be back with a vengeance, you know?
They are, because they have remembered it and we have not.
Yeah, well, I don't... Yeah, but see, I don't... You know, I just flip back between, oh, my God, the American people, you know, they don't pay attention to... Well, we've been sold such a big bill of goods, you know, I don't know... I'm not saying we're not responsible, but this constitutionally protected media is just doing us so wrong.
I don't have a problem with the constitutional protection. I got a problem with the media.
Well, no, but the media shouldn't be protected constitutionally if it's just controlled by five corporations.
Precisely. You know, precisely. You know, I got an email that just rolled in, Sandra. It said the subject line is 1830s Clay. Hell, Bob, the neocon swayed populist doesn't remember the 1970s. And he reminds me of this little right-winger from back when I was on the air on the terrestrial radio a few years back, a caller I had virtually every night, who was a right-winger and dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass, and who, when I mentioned the Iran-Contra scandal, said, "What's that?"
No. You know, I'm constantly sort of reading, because it's just an endless cycle in this country, you know, with what goes on.
Yeah, you just said something, Sandra. You said, I'm constantly reading. You remember Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451?
Yeah.
And how there was an underground network of people who made it a point to memorize this book or that book. And they became the repository of that book because it was illegal to print them, you know, and the firemen actually started fires instead of putting them out.
Right.
That's what you're talking about. And that's where we are. We are in an America where a very small number of people, many of whom I am proud to consider friends of this radio network, are actively busting their asses to remember history. And to know literature, and know and to know culture, and see how the links all come together.
Well, and more importantly, it just gives you, you know, a sort of reaffirming of human nature. I mean, you can go back as far as antiquity in Roman times and find just the same things that are going on. You see what I'm saying? It doesn't diverge. And the solutions are always the same. And we get them for a while, like, say, Keynesian mixed economic policies, and then for some reason, it falls apart. See, and that's the thing.
But see, on our side, Sandra, our problem is that we never run them to ground.
You
know, if you study military history, you'll see example after example of where an army wins a stunning battle, and instead of chasing the enemy down and wiping them out once and for all, they stop to rummage the abandoned baggage train.
Well, yeah. Okay.
And so the other army, instead of being utterly defeated, lives to fight again.
Right. Hannibal, you know, he was at the gates of Rome and couldn't get it done. So, you know.
Well, look, the Southern Army, commanded by Stonewall Jackson, had the Union Army utterly defeated and on the run twice at Bull Run. And both times they stopped and went, damn, food!
Right.
Instead of marching on in and taking Washington. Now, that's kind of an icky proposition from the Civil War, but it's a classic example of that. You know, we don't finish the job. We had Nixon gone But instead, instead of having a Congress and a Supreme Court, most particularly, though, the Congress, that would raise an outcry when Gerald Ford did something that was absolutely unprecedented in the history of the United States by pardoning Nixon for crimes that he hadn't even been charged with yet. The Congress said, oh, we need national healing.
Yeah, no, and the thing is that, I mean, my mother, I mean, I was sort of young, but my mother told me that the country was wrapped with that whole thing, and it was a disgrace that Nixon didn't go to jail, because the country was ready. They ain't none of this healing crap. They wanted him to go to jail. I don't believe any of this stuff I read now that, oh, you know, we wanted some closure, we wanted it to be over with.
Well, yeah, and Gerald, you know, Gerald Ford on the television, my fellow Americans, our long national nightmare is finally over.
Right.
No, our long national nightmare began the day that he pardoned Nixon.
No. That was just such a bad move. And to be partisan, Republicans again, you know?
Yeah. but you know... Again, just listening to my own family, like you listen to your mama, my grandmother was born in 1894. She died in 1985. So I had her with me, and she was in her right mind up till I was about 20 years old.
Wow.
And she told me about the Great Depression, and she told me what it did to her family.
Mm.
And she told me things like the Republicans promised us three meals a day, and they delivered oatmeal, skip a meal, and miss a meal. But more importantly,
that's how you described it.
Yeah. We got the Republicans promised us three meals a day, and we got them: oatmeal, skip a meal, and miss a meal. And you know, obviously that stayed with me. But what she went on to say was that the Republicans had done it to them in the 1920s.
Right. No, it's the same thing. That's what I mean. It's like, you know, you look at Truman and his efforts to try to get national health care when everywhere in Europe was getting it, and he was stopped cold. By who? The same people who are here now, you know?
Yeah, because of the Great Depression, by the time that Social Security rolled around, Sandra, there were only 17 Republicans in the United States Senate. And only because there were only 17 Republicans in the United States Senate was it possible to get Social Security through.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's just sort of, you know, I can't begin to say how sick to death I am of that, the same ideology that refuses to allow progress to come in this country. They're always there to stop it. And I guess it's because of the moneyed interest. I mean, I don't know. I find it exhausting at this point.
It is, but it is also because of our failure to transmit very important lessons generation by generation by generation. The Republicans are very good at doing that because they have sworn, and they have not backed off of it, they have sworn that someday they will eliminate Social Security. And by God, Sandra, they will. On the other hand, we did not, with many exceptions, the ball got dropped because my grandmother passed it on to her child, who passed it on to me, what the Republicans had done to their family, and I'm passing it on to mine. But the ball got dropped in a lot of other places. You know, there are, I know one of your favorite human beings on planet Earth is Miss Condoleezza Rice.
The hair.
That woman had grandparents who were sharecroppers in Alabama.
Not only that, but she was friends with the girls that got blown up in the church.
Yeah, and the lessons got passed on to her. But she got up the ladder a few rungs, and instead of reaching a hand down to pull somebody else up with her, she started stomping on them with her designer pumps.
And torturing.
Yeah.
Don't forget the torturing.
I mean, I remember, the 2004 election, she's got a cousin out in Colorado somewhere who's a teacher or some such, a college professor, who came out and said, that woman has forgotten every last little thing her granny and granddad ever told her.
Well, she also has another cousin who's a really well-known civil rights lawyer in L.A.
That's the one I was thinking about.
Constantine. Her name is Constantine Rice. And she's completely the polar opposite. You know, and if I don't know what happened to Condoleezza Rice, but, and this is, you know, somewhat bad to say, but I even give her less flack because she knows better, too. It's like, lady, what's happening?
Yeah.
You're black. You know, I'm like, wow. I don't know. I don't have any slack for her. I don't have any slack for Hillary either. I'm still stuck on that. I'm like, no. Wrong.
Who's to, you know, the only kind of consolation that I can come up with out of this is she is saying this because she is beyond, Hillary's saying this stuff because she's beyond the pale and she has gone completely around the bend and she's being eaten alive by the fact that she is not going to finish and fulfill her dream, her destiny, her mission, however she defines it.
Yeah, no. I mean, you know, on a lighter note, and I have to go, but I would just love to be a fly in the meetings right now. I mean, she must be pulling her eyeballs out. You know what I mean?
Yep, I
and
do.
The N-word must be flying. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I hope not, but there's entirely too great a likelihood that it is.
Well, okay, let's just say her Negro problem has just destroyed her. I think she's lost it, really.
Well, that's what those millions will do for you.
Well, at least she can take some comfort in it. She don't spend it all on her campaign. She keeps, you know, anyway, it's all...
Hopefully it's all kabuki theater, and it's going to... And the geniuses are right when they say that, you know, this will be over but before the middle of June.
Well, somebody was saying that she's going to drop out or something.
That's what I've heard since Tuesday. I mean, you know, Tim Russert, you know, like I trust him, declared, well, you know, it's all over and we know who the nominee is going to be now.
Oh, what, Tomato Head?
Yeah.
I hate that guy.
Oh, I do too.
Anyway, I'll leave you with that charming comment. Have a good evening.
All right, take care, Sandra. It's always a joy.
Okay, thanks.
Bye now. Okay, let's see if we've got anybody who stayed along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Hillbilly Leaders.
Well, hello, Juanita. How are you, dear?
I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
You know, I'm feeling not so good.
Yeah. great show.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, great show. Great call-ins and all. I wanted to say something a little aside about something I saw on History Channel. Probably before I started calling in, and it was a special. It was like a two-hour special on the history of hillbillies in this country.
Oh, yeah? You did?
Yeah, and it was great. It was wonderful. This one I still have a dish. I mean, I can't get anything like that now, but, yeah, and you know, when you start talking about that British, them defeating the British.
Mm-hmm.
I know what you're talking about because I saw that. Because it told all about that and told why they got into, distillation or whatever, moonshining. And
sure.
It, you know, and they just had to do what they had to do.
Yeah.
But it was great. I've never seen anything like it before, and I've never... You know, it was really interesting, really good.
Well,
I've just been wanting to tell you that.
Well, if you happen to find out what the name of it is, or if anybody else listening knows the name of it, shoot it my way, and I'll try to find it and watch it because I'd love to see something like that.
Yeah, it was on. It was right before I got rid of my dish, you know, and I'll have to look up and see if I can find it because it was a great show. It went through a long history, you know, and they just fixed those British up royally. The British thought they were something else, and the hillbillies got them, honey.
they gave them all they could stand, and they did it after marching across the mountains and getting liquored up on the way. Nothing worse than a bunch of pissed off, mean, drunk hillbillies.
Yeah, but I've been meaning to tell you about seeing that. I've been disturbed about Hillary for quite a while too, and him, because they have such a bond with black people, and I think they're just throwing it away.
Well, that's
and,
had.
Yeah. And it's
because
sad. I think it's
yeah.
sad.
It is, because it's like marching backwards. I have a quote here that our buddy David from South Carolina sent us about some remarks from Desmond Tutu that I need to try to remember to share that I found very profound, where he talks about the necessity of this country having a National Reconciliation Commission, and I couldn't agree more. But, you know, when you see the progress, because one of the things we could always point to under the Clinton administration is that not only did the rich get richer, the rich always get richer. Okay, that's one of the fun parts of being rich.
Yeah.
But the poor were better off under Bill Clinton, too. And there, we were told, net income increased. And, you know, abortions that the right wing is so upset about. They went down in every segment of society under Bill Clinton, and they started going up again under George Bush. Crime went down under the Clinton administration. You know, we forget the right things that he did, like the email that I read a little bit ago noticed. Everybody says, wow, Clinton, I don't want no more dynasty.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Bill Clinton was a pretty damn good president. He was a damn sight better than Ronald Reagan. Bill Clinton, on his worst day, was about a million, billion, jillion, quadrillion times better than Ronald Reagan on his best.
Yeah.
And the same applies to George H.W. Bush, and Lord God Almighty knows it applies to George W. Bush.
That is beside the point.
You know, I try to keep that stuff in perspective. I was a young-ish adult during, you know, I'm not exactly, you know, one foot in the grave and one on a banana peel right now. I'm 45. But I was finishing off my 20s and starting my 30s during the Clinton administration.
Uh-huh.
And it felt pretty good at the time. I feel like in the 8 years of the Bush administration that I have aged 20.
Oh, it's just a torment. It's a torment. It's a frustration. It's sadness. You know, it's to think of what we've lost. You know, the things that we had and we've lost. I mean, we've really lost respect of the world. And
we've lost the most fundamental tenets that form our republic, Juanita. We've lost habeas corpus. We have lost something that has been a fundament of American law and, yes, English law since the 13th century.
And I heard something that sort of got me. I just heard just a little bit of it. They were talking about the mountaintop mining.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about how many people were losing their homes. And they said, well, the people might have owned the homes, but they didn't own the land under it. And I thought, brother, have you ever heard them say that?
Okay, run that by me again, please. I'm trying
to... Said, I just heard it on the fly. You know what I'm saying? I'm just passing through. And about the mountaintop removal.
Sure.
Findings. And it said that they were, like, getting closer. More people were losing their homes because of it.
Yeah.
And because of the explosions and so forth. And they said, well, they might own the house, but they don't own the land under it.
Oh, gosh, yes. That's the absolute truth. We don't own the minerals underneath underneath the ground that this house sits on.
Yeah. And I never heard that before.
That's the story of West Virginia. You don't own your mineral rights, because a long time ago it was decided that just because you thought you bought that earth didn't mean you owned what was under it.
Boy. But the way they said it, it was just so callous.
A coal company that wanted to, if there was a seam of coal under my house, and there probably is one, if they decided that they wanted that seam of coal, they could undermine my house.
Yeah.
And if my house fell in, they might have to pay me a pittance, you know, as compensation. The city of Beckley, West Virginia, where our mailing address is, the city of Beckley, West Virginia, is entirely undermined. That's what it's called, undermining. That's where that phrase comes from. One of these days, the city of Beckley, West Virginia, may entirely collapse into a giant hole. You know those sinkholes you get in Florida?
Oh, yeah.
This will make those look like puddles.
They got a huge one out in Texas, too.
Yeah. And that's
huge.
Yeah. Amazing amounts of southern West Virginia, western Virginia, eastern Kentucky are undermined. And, in fact, the old played-out coal mines, for instance, that don't have any coal in them anymore, one of the things that the mountaintop removers are now doing is called injection, and they take the sludge and the filth and the waste from the mountaintop removal operations, the liquids, and inject them into those old coal mines, and then what happens is the side of the mountain blows out, and you wind up with what happened to Martin County, Kentucky in 2001. Billions and billions of gallons of vile, filthy sludge just blown out all over an entire community. You know, like I said, billions of gallons.
Yeah.
And it could happen anywhere in West Virginia. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up, because, you know, I was talking, not talking, but I was communicating on one of the websites earlier today with somebody who lives near the Crandall Canyon mine out in Utah, and we were explaining to this person a little bit about mountaintop removal, and said, you know, look, more high explosives are used in West Virginia every day than are used in Iraq, and that person just wow, and most of America still doesn't know about it, because among other things, they think that coal is a clean energy source because they watched the pageants on CNN that were sponsored by Clean Coal for America's Future.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, okay, the coal's clean now, then I can leave the lights on. And I can help screw another hillbilly. You know.
They could take the easy way out, you know, like you were talking about Jimmy Carter. And we probably would have gone on, if he'd have gone into a second term, we'd have probably gone on to solar in a lot of places. And it's like it's just too easy for these people. They don't think they can make any money off of it. So they want to do anything, and they don't care what it costs the people. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they don't have to do all of that mining and stuff. I think we could go on solar down here tomorrow.
Lord, don't say that around Jay Rockefeller or Nick Rahal. They're liable to strangle you on the spot. We can't live without coal. Coal is America's energy future.
Yeah, you can live without coal. Don't kid yourself. We could live without coal. And another thing, you're talking about Barack now. There's one thing that does bother me too about him, is he's sort of interested in the nuclear energy thing.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about that either.
No, you know Al Gore is against it.
Yeah. Yeah. And
it's not necessary. If it was necessary, that would be different.
If the American people want it badly enough, we can find ways to energize our country cleanly and greenly.
Mm-hmm.
But it will take a mass uprising of the American people or else a massive crisis. Check this out. The Bush administration thinks that if they only start bombing Iran, that eventually they can control Iran's oil. What they don't realize is that if they start bombing Iran, Iran can turn the spigots off. Iran can torch its own wells. Iran can make it virtually impossible for the Repiglicans and the Project for a New American Century crowd and the rest of those thugs to get what they want. And then you will see change begin coming to America because, you know, we will, I mean, the American people, Juanita, will pay $3.75 a gallon for gas. We'll pay $4.75 a gallon for gas. If it comes to it, we'll pay $5.75 a gallon for gas. We'll pay $10.75 a gallon for gas because that is how addicts behave. Okay? Whatever it takes, you'll pay to get your fix, and you'll do anything to get the money it takes to get your fix.
Yeah.
But you know what? When there ain't no fix to be got, then you got
to
do something else. Right.
You know, the Germans were very resourceful. The Nazis were very resourceful about using alternative energy.
They invented the very liquid coal technology that our congressional delegation here in West Virginia wants to shove down the rest of the country's throat. No kidding. Really.
But,
so, you know, there you have it.
Yeah.
Well, Juanita, thank you very much. It's good to talk to you, dear.
You're very welcome. I was going to say, you were talking about gas. I don't remember if you remember when I told you they raised my rates on the vehicle.
Uh-huh.
Well, it had problems, and we couldn't afford to fix it, so we sold it. So I don't have a vehicle. So I don't have to pay them that money. But I bet you a lot of people are going to be like me.
That's a blessing and a curse. You don't have a gasoline bill, but it sure makes it hard to get around on Shank's mares, that's for sure.
And you know when the insurance companies start suffering, something might happen.
You know, yeah, there is a segment of the American population that when it finally begins to cry, Lord, Lord, will be heard.
Yeah. Because I'm in a fortunate place in a way that for myself, I don't have to there are other alternatives. There didn't used to be, but there are other alternatives. I can't just go anywhere I want to, like when I had a vehicle, but, you know, it's not that I'm completely shut off from transportation. So I'm just going to enjoy it. I'm just cutting down on just about everything.
We have cut our driving to an absolute minimum.
Yeah.
Because there's no other way around it.
I know it. And it makes up close to $4 down here. It kind of goes up and down. But it's way beyond the $3 thing.
Oh, wait till August.
Yeah.
$3.75 a gallon is going to look nice in August.
Yeah. Okay, though.
All right. You take care, Juanita.
Okay, nine-nine.
Bye now. Never mind the hour two intro or the hour three intro. When it gets going good like this, I'm not going to bust it up. We're going to talk and we're going to work stuff out. And there's stuff that's got to be worked out. There's stuff that I absolutely am hell-bent on getting to this evening. I've got a video here. And granted, it is a video, so it'll take some setting up, because the audio is rather weird. This is video of an American Marine at a checkpoint in Iran. What has happened is a taxi driver has pulled up to the checkpoint, and the Marine speaks about as much Arabic as the Iraqi taxi driver speaks of English. But that's okay, because the Marine just wants to pass some information along. And this conversation is conveyed with the Marine standing outside the car with the body armor and a really, really powerful weapon in his hand, and the terrified little Iraqi taxi driver sitting in his car just hoping that he survives the checkpoint. And that's how this goes down.
Know any insurgents? You don't know any insurgents? Well, if you get to where you're going, right now it's about 1600. Just let the insurgents know that Sierra Deuce is on bug, and we'll be here for about another hour if they want to come out and shoot at us. All right. Mujahideen, Jew.
No.
Right there. Okay. So, I mean, they can come from either direction if you want. I mean, this stuff, we don't care. Right now, we just want to shoot at anything, but preferably, like, within an hour, because we got to go back and sleep and eat, shower, and shit like that. Oh, you're going to Baghdad? Oh, there's shitloads in there, dude. Just like, drive through the town and say, tell them. Just tell them Sierra Deuce is on bug. We'll be here for an hour. We want to play. Okay, tell them to put me on pussies and cowards. Come out and shoot at us. We haven't had any action since we've been out here, dude. It's crazy. I know. But we just want to shoot at something. Alright? Well, wear your seatbelt. Don't run with scissors. Drink milk. Have a nice day. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Just
wear your seatbelt.
Go on. Got that? I'm sharing that with you because of another story. Out of USA Today, and it has nothing to do with Hillary Clinton. Praise be to God. Now, you heard the young man, right? Young Marine, something about Bug R. Deuce, or that must be the short form of the name of his unit. I'm sure somebody can straighten me up on it. But we're on post today, and we just want to shoot at something. This guy doesn't even understand English, but his buddy's got a video camera rolling on him, and it's going to be real funny to tell the Haji that we just want to shoot at something. USA Today reporting today, more than 43,000 U.S. troops listed as medically unfit for combat in the weeks before their scheduled deployment to Iraq or Afghanistan since 2003 were sent anyway. This according to Pentagon records. The reliance on troops found medically non-deployable is another sign of stress placed on a military that has sent 1.6 million service members to the war zones, soldier advocacy groups say. Bobby Muller is president of Veterans for America. He says it is a consequence of the consistent churning of our troops. They are repeatedly exposed to high-intensity combat with insufficient time at home to rest and heal before redeploying. According to statistics, the number of troops who doctors found non-deployable but who were still sent to Iraq or Afghanistan fluctuated from 10,854 in 2003 down to 5,397 in 2005 and back up to 9,140 in 2007. May I refer you to the case of young Tommy Edward Bennett? Jones. The young man we talked about a couple of nights ago, who at Fort Carson, Colorado, blew his brains out with his mama watching. Now, notably, the Pentagon didn't bother to list exactly what the illnesses were that kept the soldiers from being deployable and for which they were deployed any old way. This is the first war in which a health screening process has been used, said the Pentagon, referring to an examination by a Pentagon staffer, that's singular staffer, of 10,000 individual health records last year to determine causes for the non-deployable ratings. Well, some of it was they needed eyeglasses or dental work or allergy medicine or there was a small number of mental health cases. Small. Tiny. Remember the other night when I was talking to Congressman Filner and I said, it may not look like it, but do you think there is an actual thread that runs from the Pentagon to the VA? Because the VA was covering up how many veteran suicides? And here we find out that the Pentagon said, well, they were perfectly, they just needed a pair of glasses, that's all. The Army has most of the non-deployable service members that got shipped anyway. Some numbers came from the National Guard and the Reserve. And, yeah, there were some Marines. 43,000 military personnel deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan despite being medically unfit to do so. Now, knowing that, let's go back to this audio again and listen to this young man talking to this poor Iraqi cab driver.
You know any insurgents? You don't know any insurgents?
You know any insurgents? You don't know any insurgents because the guy speaks English. Yes? No? Please don't kill me? What?
Well, if you get to where you're going, right now it's about 1,600. Just let the insurgents know that Sierra Deuce is on bug, and we'll be here for about another hour if they want to come out and shoot at us.
See, that's the problem. That's the problem this young man faces, and other young men and women like him. They have been deployed to fight in a war that doesn't get fought like the wars that they were trained to fight. It's almost as pitiful and pathetic as the British in their bright red coats marching in neat linear formations into open fields to do battle with an enemy that is absolutely determined, that would be us, the enemy, absolutely determined to hide behind stone walls, big rocks, in trees, and imitate the tactics that have been used, in fact, on them for 100 years or so before by the natives whose land they were actively engaged in stealing. When you can't fight overwhelming numbers en masse, you pick them off a little bit at a time. And it's driving this young Marine mad, because he is trained. I mean, from the very ends of his toenails to the last molecule of his closely cropped hair, he is trained to kill an enemy that will at least show its face. So he winds up sitting here talking to a cab driver on his way into Baghdad, saying, "Oh, you know, would you please tell the insurgents to come out because we want to shoot at them." Well, that, never mind. Listen for yourself. Okay, there he takes his service weapon and he points at it and says, "Mujahideen." What? Huh?
Oh, right there. Okay. So, I mean, they can come from either direction if you want. I mean, it's up to...
they can shoot at us from any direction they want. You know, we're studs. We just want to kill something. You think, but see, that's why Bob hates the military. He thinks they just want to kill some. It ain't me! Listen to the daggum young man in the video.
We don't care. Right now we just want to shoot at anything, but...
Right now we just want to shoot at anything. Because, see, they go out and they drive around on patrol in poorly armored Humvees. And they drive by a palm tree, and the damn palm tree explodes. And the next thing you know, his buddies are laying around with limbs. And I don't mean palm fronds. I mean arms and legs scattered hither and yon, and blood shooting up in fountains around them. And there's nobody to shoot at! And that's how you get this.
Probably, like, within an hour. Because we got to go back and sleep and eat, shower, and chill like that. Oh, you're going to Baghdad? Oh, there's shitloads in there, dude. Just like, drive through the town and say, tell them. Just tell them Sierra Deuce is on bug. We'll be here for an hour. We want to play. Okay, tell them.
We want to play. We want to play. Because it's game. It's just a game. Except for the fountains of blood and the limbs flying through the air, and the concussive, deafening blasts, and the cold sweats that you wake up in the middle of the night. And going home and seeing another cab driver with brown skin and remembering how that one day you said, "We just want to shoot something." Somewhere out there, there's a young man this young man I don't know if he's home yet. I pray that he has survived and that he can get the help that he so profoundly needs. Because you know what? I just hope that his mama doesn't have as her last memento mori of her gone son, the baby who suckled at her breast, the image of him on a video talking to a terrified cab driver saying, "We just want to kill something." How could anyone possibly live with a moment like that? This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
think that just must be something in the air, because I have this profound urge the last couple of nights to play disc jockey. Those two cuts from the latest release of my favorite band, Drive-By Truckers, from Brighter Than Creation's Dark. Two cuts, The Home Front, and That Man I Shot. Whew, what an album that is. Holy mackerel. And a couple of emails to share. And speaking of the truckers, heard from our buddies Michael and Jen, who went to the truckers show last night in Columbus, got an email as soon as Michael got home. Holy crap, are my ears ringing. The band was great. One thing I must mention, though. We parked a car across from a car with an I Heart Mountain sticker. There's a lot of those around here. And West Virginia plates. I was going to give them a woo, I Heart Mountains, or a woo, West Virginia. But they all appeared to be really plastered. Carload of young guys, five or six guys maybe. You never know if someone might misinterpret your yelps of approval when they're impaired. How true, how true. They were in front of us driving out of the garage, and one of the guys was throwing potato chips at the parking attendant. And we pulled up, the attendant was just laughing his ass off, commenting how seriously baked the guys were. And how he'd never had potato chips thrown at him before. I told him they drove all the way from West Virginia to throw those potato chips at him, and he laughed. Turns out he was from originally from West Virginia, too. Hope those baked kids made it home okay. Glad you enjoyed the show. Michael does note that the mix was a little off because the vocals, especially Patterson's, were kind of low and muddy. Mentioned that to our chief engineer and rock tech god, John Fox, and he explained it all to me. If you stick around for the horn section, or maybe all foxed up later on this evening, he'll probably explain it to you, too. Let's see. A couple of other emails rolling in. Some comments from our pal Cindy in the Great Northwest, first of all. Going back to the conversation I had with Sandra, she said, my dad served, too. My uncle died in Patton's army in a campaign in North Africa. Dad landed at Normandy, Omaha Beach. Dad told me he didn't want to live in this world anymore because Bush had destroyed his country. Quote him, I didn't fight for this to happen to my country. He died the next day. I swear he gave up wanting to live because of George Bush. We share this experience. With regard to Richard Nixon and the pardon, she says, we wanted his head on a stick, and Kissinger's too. Note how many of the very people in his hench squad are running today's government. Hard to get around, isn't it? They wouldn't be here if we had run them to ground when they were in full retreat, like we should have. She says, why don't we make being a Republican illegal? Well, I'm joking, of course, but we get what we paid for. You know, I think there is a provision in the Constitution, I believe it's in Article 2, where upon a two-thirds vote, you can, in each house, you can do all kinds of mean stuff to the opposition. Can't remember it offhand. I'll have to look it up. She said, I'm joking, of course, but we get what we paid for. Nothing. We did not teach the children well. Not me, but in many families. Says Cindy. Damn that TV. What have we lost? She says, we've almost lost our country. And I don't know if almost counts anymore.
If John McCain takes the oath of office on January 20th, 2009, we have lost our country. And by the way, you guys don't let me get away with diddly. Sitting there talking, and apparently I said Marine in Iran, and then I downshifted and went back to Iraq. See how it happens? See how it gets into your brain? Iran, Iraq, it's a vowel. And if they're not in Iraq, God knows there are umpty bajillion. Okay, no. That doesn't really take that many. But there is a hardcore cancerous knot of right-wing, bloodthirsty, slaughter-minded Republicans who are hell-bent on putting that Marine in Iran and making me into a prophet. Tough. So, in the last remaining waning half hour of the program here, let's see if we can't have a little bit of fun. Indeed. By the way, if you drop by the network website, you will see a little blog posting of mine talking about something that Peter Godbold, John Fox, and I came up with on the Horn Section last night. Been looking... Yeah, I'm not satisfied with the idea of calling the media anymore the mainstream media, because there's nothing mainstream about them. They don't represent mainstream ideas. They don't represent mainstream ideals. What they do is to try to shape them, hence the constant orgy of Reverend Wright. God damn America! That's all you hear. You don't hear what comes before it. You don't hear what comes after it. Just that, because it inflames people. Because it sounds like it's not patriotic. When in fact, what it is something is a brand of rhetoric that exists on a continuum that starts along about Thomas Paine, goes through Thomas Jefferson, and winds up at Jeremiah Wright. Really, if you know your history. But we got to think, so mainstream, no, there's nothing mainstream about them. It's an extremist media. But that's, after what John Fox and Peter Godbold and I came up with, which is the for-profit media, somebody took and said, no, the mercenary media, and no, it's the for-profit media. There's nothing mercenary about it. Because mercenary implies that you're actually on somebody's side for some reason. They're on nobody's side. The only thing they're in it for is profit. The for-profit media. And you can go read my thoughts on it. But, you know, the for-profit media is how you wind up with a $15 million contract paid to Katie Couric. It's how you wind up with... Howie Kurtz on CNN not disclosing the fact that he is chin deep in bias by virtue of his marriage. It's how you wind up with Tim Russert and his multiple millions confessing that he got the come to Jesus speech from former GE chairman Jack Welch. It's how you wind up with Chris Matthews, and it's how you wind up with Glenn Beck, who actually has ratings that it takes algebra to calculate and still continues to get his check signed by the goobers at CNN Headline News for no apparent good reason except for the fact that somewhere along the way somebody has told them that there's a buck in it. But enough of that. You can go read it for yourself if you want. But like I said, let's do have a little bit of fun. Because you just don't get these every... Well, no, that's the sad thing. You do get these every day. Another story of Republican hypocrisy, Republican peccadillos. Mark Levine touched on it briefly during his program. We're talking here about the New York City area's only repig-licking member of the House of Representatives, a guy who represents, I think, Staten Island, a guy by the name of Vito Fisella, who got dinged for DUI in Virginia, Northern Virginia, NOVA, you know, the D.C. area, and repeated a version of the alphabet for the arresting officer that I, frankly, haven't heard since my kids were first learning it. So he was drunk, and he was DUI. Usually these stories end with him being in a stunning black taffeta cocktail frock and fishnet stockings and poorly accessorized heels. But no, in this case, he was, in fact, dressed in men's clothing. And in order to arrange bail, he had to call... He had to call a woman who wasn't his wife. He had to call his mistress. His blood alcohol level was checked in at 0.133. Apparently he was still getting drunker, however, because after he was arrested and processed, he went ahead and checked in at 0.17. By the way, just in case you're keeping score at home, the legal level for drunk behind the wheel is 0.08, 0.08% alcohol in one's blood, and he had 0.17% alcohol in his blood. A bunch of booze. I mean, for a guy of any decent size at all, that's at least a 12-pack or maybe a pint of hard liquor. But anyway, that's not the be-all and end-all of the story. He explained to the police that he was on his way to pick up his daughter, who needed to go to the hospital. Although earlier he had said he was on his way to visit friends. Well, it turns out the daughter is, in fact, his daughter, 3 years old, and not by his wife. A love child, if you will, that he fathered upon a woman who was a military liaison to the House of Representatives. Well, today, he broke down in tears on the floor of the House of Representatives under the emotional weight of his recent behavior. Yes, yes. He wept in the arms of the chaplain of the House of Representatives. If only we had audio, it would probably something go something a little bit like this. I have sinned. Well, no, that's too southern. But I have sinned against you. Now, see, you can't really put. See, that's why there are no really successful northern televangelists. The accent doesn't work, because if you're going to do one of those, you got it. It only works. Jimmy Swaggart. I have sinned against you. It just doesn't translate, does it? But because I have had this profound urge to play disc jockey, I've got a dedication going out to Vito Fisella. Right here on the horn. It's from Vito. To my loving lover who isn't my wife. Yeah, that's it. Right here on the horn.
Having my baby, what a lovely way of saying how much you love me. having my baby. What a lovely way of saying what you're thinking of me. I can see it, your face is glowing. I can see it in your eyes, I'm happy in knowing that you're having my baby. You're the woman I love, and I love what it's doing to you. I'm having my baby. You're a woman in love, and I love what's going through you. The need inside you, I see it showing. Oh, the seed inside you, baby, do you feel it growing?
That's tough to stomach, but, you know, that's from that's for Vito and his lovely not wife. But that's not all the Republican love that we have to report for the evening. No. It is dedication night. And we got another dedication going out. This one goes out to Horace Don Gresham. Horace Don Gresham of Newton County, Georgia. Yes, indeedy. Horace Don Gresham of Newton County, Georgia is a candidate for the, wait for it, county school board. Sure. He's a candidate for the county school board, and Horace Don Newton has a 1988 conviction for sodomy to a child under 14. He was also arrested in 1999 on a charge of public indecency. The Newton County Republican Party is having kittens with crocheted tails. State Senator John Douglas, Republican, Social Circle. That's what it really says on the Atlanta Journal-Constitution website, Social Circle. Is there a place called Social Circle, Georgia? Well, if there is, State Senator John Douglas is from there. And he says, the thought of having a person who is a convicted pedophile and who engaged in an act of indecent exposure represent any part of Georgia on a local school board boggles the mind and defies logic, and I demand that he resign from the ticket. State Senator John Douglas, you dumbass. He's a Republican like you. It's what he does. From Susan Smith's stepfather, who raped her repeatedly as a child until her mind was so bass-ackwards and torn asunder and shredded in pieces that she drowned her own children, to a perverted sicko like Newt Gingrich, who hands divorce papers to his wife while she's in a hospital bed suffering from something that could have been terminal cancer, to toe-tapping Larry Craig. The whole sick bunch of them. It's what Republicans do. But we got a dedication going out. Hey, this one's for you, Horace Don Gresham. Yes, it is. Right here on Dedication Night. Somebody turn on the mirror ball and let's backwards skate. What do you say? Rock and roll, Horace Don Gresham. Only on the horn. Horace Don Gresham convicted in 1988 of sodomy with a child less than 14 years old, and in 1999 charged with indecent exposure. Guns N' Roses. Sweet Child of Mine. Honest to God, how would you feel if you were sending your children to school in a good, upstanding, Christian, godly county like Newton County, Georgia, and you found out that a child predator was running for school board? Whew, merciful God. But damage control is underway. Steve Bray is the chairman of the Newton County Republican Party, and he said, "Well, at this point, Mr. Gresham is a candidate having gone through the qualifying process and paid his fees. Each candidate is responsible for their knowledge of and compliance with the Georgia State Election Code. The Newton County Republicans Party in the qualifying process is to certify the candidate's signatures on the documents and collect the qualifying fees. We don't know nothing about no sodomy with no less than 14-year-old, and we don't know even less about no charges of indecent exposure in 1999. We're the Republican Party. We're upstanding, godly, and moral. And please, for God's sakes, look the other way every time you hear anything about Larry Craig or Horace Don Gresham or Jimmy Jeff Gannon Guckert or... Oh, God. It ain't our fault! Beautiful. I asked, is there a... Oh, you got you guys are the ones who ought to be, I'll be here all week, try the veal. You guys are good. Cindy's son notes, is there really a social circle, Georgia? He says, yes, there is. It's just down the road from Circle Jerk, Georgia. I'm almost grateful that the show is over. But, wow, hasn't it been a fun one? Hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. See, we got past all the serious stuff, and we ended on another giggle grounded in repig-licking hypocrisy. You just can't beat that now, can you? By the way, an email before we go. Our buddy Tom in Richmond, California, writes in. Says, the mailman should have brought you my May contributions by now, and yes, you may use my name. He says, I'd like to see if I can inspire somebody else to become a new subscriber. I have here in my hands an antique book, Swiss Family Robinson, published by Henry Altimus Company, 1899. It's inscribed inside the front cover, Helen from Mama, Christmas 91. The dates don't make a lot of sense, but that would be my great aunt Helen, who would have been a young girl around that time. I don't think the book has any significant value, but a nice old book in reasonable shape for almost 110 years old. I'd like to send it to the next subscriber to the Horn, if you can get me an address. Just something to try to entice somebody to step up to the plate. So, hey, you know, if you are a fancier of old books, and you are not already a contributor, or, as Tom puts it, a subscriber, because there are subscription buttons there at headonradionetwork.com, chime in, and I'll put you two in touch. And, you know, I'm a complete geek for old books. Love them. They've got a sort of spirit of their own. But Tom says, you were talking the other day about yachts selling well, and I concur. I make very expensive accessories for yachts, and my business is stronger than ever. Unfortunately, here in the Bay Area, the cost of living is breathtaking. 50-year-old tract houses go for $800,000, and the cheapest loaf of bread in my local grocery store Tuesday was $4.29. I'm doing okay, but if the country continues on its current trajectory, I can't see how I'll be okay in 10 or 15 years, retirement age. He signs it off, Tom, sycophant. Thanks, Tom. And I'm sure Wayne has gone by the mailbox by now, so I'll try to let you know by email so that you can confirm that we've received your contribution. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And thanks to everyone. You've pushed us up near, we're approaching $700 for the month of May so far. And there's actually some hope that maybe we could start crawling a little of the way out of the hole that we're in. If you want to follow the bar graphs over at headonradionetwork.com, you certainly can. Thank you to everyone who helps keep the Horn on the air. Thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, who makes the streams and the podcasts and the archives all happen. Thanks to John Fox and Peter Godbold, our chief engineer and chief IT professional, respectively. Many thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, who proudly partially sponsors all of the programs on the Horn. They're the hardest working folks I know. And the bravest, too. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. We'll be right back.
around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. And what, to my wondering ears, did appear, seconds before the start of the show, the front doorbell. One wonders who is at the door, but I certainly cannot get up and go check to see. I suppose if it's urgent, they will kick the door in. In any case, welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 143 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, in touch with the LGBT community and our straight allies. Strictly Confidential is found exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network, also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's CRMW.net, Coal River Mountain Watch. Stop by CRMW.net and see what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Thursday, May the 8th, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m., let's see, it's about 9:03 Eastern Time on a Thursday, that is May the 8th, you're listening to a live show, and you are welcome to phone in and talk with myself and to the guest who will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. By the way, the guest is Jim Burroway, and he is the editor of Box Turtle Bulletin. I couldn't be happier to have Jim on the show. His site is devoted to analyzing statements and scientific claims of ex-gay and anti-gay organizations. And we've used his site as a resource many times. In fact, you've heard me say, gee, I ought to get that guy on the show. Well, we finally done it. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from the past show.